go ahead and turn things over to Mark Tucker. He's going to tell us 10 things that genealogy software should do.
You guys want to stand up for 30 seconds and do a little stretch? Be my guest. Is this working?
There we go. Thank you. All right, we're ready to get started. Thank you. All right, a few weeks ago in Monterey, California, a conference was held. It's called TED. It stands for Technology, Entertainment, and Design. Anybody familiar with TED? In a way, this workshop today is like a mini TED for family history software without all the celebrity status. So today, we're going to talk about some ideas that are worth spreading, which is the mantra for the TED conference. Up here on the screen, we have some of my wife's ancestors. This is the Peter O. Peterson family. Just want to make sure that we don't lose sight with all this technology and design talk, that the real reason why we're doing this is to link families together and to link us to families. So today, I'm going to talk about 10 things that genealogy software should do. Ideas lead to better design, which leads to innovation in genealogy software. My name is Mark Tucker. I am a graduate of BYU in 1994 from the Merritt School of Management Information Systems. I've been a software developer and architect for 14 years. Currently, I work for a software company in Scottsdale, Arizona, that has absolutely nothing to do with family history. So I'm taking vacation days today. I'm braving the sub-70 temperature to be here today because I have a passion about family history and technology. So first, we're going to take a quick one-minute poll to try to get an idea of who's on the audience here. So we are a genealogy software community. So we have two major categories, those who actually use the software and those who develop and sell it. So I understand that some people might actually be in two different categories, so go ahead and raise your hand more than once if that's appropriate. So how many people do personal genealogy, family history work? Good. Any professionals out there? Okay, some people get paid to do it. Anybody in the audience that is actually a certified genealogist with BCG? We have 2, 3, 4 maybe. Good. All right. How many people are schooled in and actually touch the code? So they're developers, architects, testers, that group of people. Good. How about those who are actually schooled in graphics design, user experience design, UI design, interaction design, human-computer interaction? How many? We have a few. Okay, good. Business side, CEOs. All right, some people I know wear more than one hat. Good. Now let's go back to the first group. How many people are only in the first group? The whole reason why they're here is because they use family history software. Good. Thank you. I'm glad you're here. So how many people are familiar with Elizabeth Schoen Mills? Good. All right, she's very well known in the genealogy industry. And we had a conversation on the phone last month, and she actually asked me a question. How do we learn how to do family history? And so I thought about it, and my answers were, friend or mentor teaches us, read about it in books, self-teach, we take a course. Her answer was that we learn how to do family history by the software that we use. Now I was thinking, here I'm a software architect, and that wasn't my first answer. I wonder why that was. But really, it's true. The software that we use today is really a tutor in how to do family history. So I'm going to take a little blast from the past here. Circa 1991, this is genealogy software, PATH 2.2. Here we go. We are able to enter individuals in. We can enter in people's marriages. We can also have a sophisticated pedigree chart here where we can integrate things in. And this is actually the roots of our genealogy software today. These are still some of the primary mechanisms that we use to input data today. So I'm going to talk about 10 ideas, 10 things that I think family history software should do that currently is not doing. If we were able to take these past two decades of learning that we've done in creating family history software and start over from scratch, we're going to build a brand new application with that learning, what would it look like? I think it would include these 10 things. So is this just my wish list, or is this a requirements document? You guys be the judge at the end of the presentation. The first point I want to talk about is the genealogical proof standard. It was created more than 10 years ago by the Board for Certification of Genealogists, and it's part of the requirements to be a certified genealogist. But outside of that circle, it's not really that well known. But it's not just for certified genealogists. It helps us get as close to the truth as possible. Helps us overcome brick walls. It helps us make conclusions where we weren't able to make conclusions before. It really gives credibility to our research. So it allows us to do research, not re-research. There's 5 steps in the GPS, and we'll go ahead and go through some of these processes. I went ahead and incorporated this into a visual map. So this is something that I've created. It's out on thinkgenealogy.com. You can go ahead and download it, print it out big if you want to. But this is a visual representation of the steps of the GPS. So the first step of the GPS is a reasonably exhaustive search. So think of, for example, in Family Tree Maker 2008, it has a web search feature. You can connect to ancestry.com. It can go ahead and pull down information. Well, think about that for Family Search, for World Vital Records, for footnote.com, and imagine that being implemented in a consistent way across all genealogy software. What a great asset to be able to search and get information. The next part is to have a complete and accurate source citation. We're going to talk about that in a little bit more detail in a few minutes. The next is that we're going to analyze and correlate information. This is where we get to actually take the information. We get to say, is this source an original or a derivative source? We have some special cases for image copy, for transcripts, etc. We have some information that comes out of those sources. Is that primary information or is that secondary information? Then we take that information, we compare it to what we really want to have find out, the problem we want to have solved, and that becomes evidence. And we go ahead and determine if that evidence directly or fully answers that question or indirectly. And then we go ahead and address the special case for negative evidence. The next part is resolving conflicts. Actually, last week I had a podcast interview with Dear Myrtle, and I kept saying resolve concerns. I guess that's my missionary training. At least I didn't say build relationships of trust. But so it's resolving conflicts. All conflicts have to be resolved, and this is really a weighing process. This is really the power of the GPS. It gets us over the and around our brick walls because we can give weight. Usually original sources have more weight than derivative sources. Usually primary information has more weight than secondary. In the case of evidence, indirect evidence can just have just as much or more weight than direct evidence. So this weighing process, this ability to evaluate and to resolve these conflicts, not concerns, allows us to then make a conclusion, which is a written conclusion. So just briefly, I want to talk about organize, because that's one of the first things we're going to do with information. A lot of forms of our sources nowadays are digital. And this isn't a family history software. This is Photoshop Elements 6. But I do like some of its organizing features. Off on the top right, you're able to see this idea of albums, where you can group documents together, and you can tag them with information. So you can tag them with surname information or places and to find them quickly. You can also stack sources together. For example, this bottom right, bottom left corner here is a journal from my great-grandfather that was digitized. So each page of that journal is a separate image, but I can group it together and virtually treat that as one source. It also has the ability to look at information based on the date of the document. In this case, the date of the photo, by when it was imported into the software, by file location, by a map. And it uses these timelines to help us minimize and filter out the information. So in order to adapt something like this to genealogy or family history software, where I'm going to use both of those interchangeably today, we need to be able to group by source type. Maybe the record system, the organization system we like, is to group all the birth certificates together or all the death certificates or census records together. Or maybe we want to group by a specific surname or even down to a specific family. So a software that allows us to organize in that way would be a great asset. Also, we'd also have to update the timeline feature so it used the source date as opposed to just the date of the image that we have. The next thing I'm going to talk about is transcription or transcribing. There are certain rules around actually transcribing or getting information out of documents. Now, if we think about the primary way that we entered information before, kind of our roots that I showed before, We first started out with entering in that information that we needed to print out on our family group sheets or pedigree charts, and also the information that we would need to submit to Ancestrafile or for the temple submission. As things went on, we decided, well, we need to keep track of those sources, so we added the ability to document the sources. Then we started having the ability to include those sources into our software. What if we were to be able to do a complete 180 on this and say, what if we started with the source first and everything else followed suit for that? It talks about, well, it follows along, I think, really well with the idea of Dan Loyer of source centricity. So starting off with the source first. This is a mock-up of a screen that I've done. I've actually tried some of these screen designs I've done in here are more polished, but maybe that lies a little bit as far as the fact that maybe a pen on paper sketch would have been more accurate, because these ideas aren't finished. I'm hoping this is a springboard for other people's ideas to improve on what I've got here and actually start this dialogue among all of us in the genealogy software community. But this example shows highlighting, but not just highlighting for the fact of annotating. But in this case, maybe a dialogue pops up and asks us, what is that information that we're extracting? Is it a person or a place? Maybe if it's a text document, you could use OCR and actually do that ourselves. But this, use this as a primary mechanism for entering data into our database. In some ways, it's similar to the family search indexing that allows you to give some highlights and ability to extract, but a little bit more interactive. In some ways, it's like footnote, where you're able to annotate a document and say, this is a person, a place, a date, and actually annotate the document. I think that has a place too, but it goes deeper than that. Something that's kind of cool along these lines is that to be able to annotate the source actually with the citation, so that when you print off that source from your software, the citation is already there. So that leads me to the next point, which is source citation. A lot of work has been done by Elizabeth Schoen Mills over the past decade or so on evidence analysis and specifically citation analysis. So in 1997, she came out with a book called Evidence, and for a long time that was considered the Bible of source citation. And this last year, she came out with Evidence Explained, which is a much expanded version. And Legacy Family Tree version 7 is going to have that feature in it. So hopefully, other software will follow suit. All right, let's talk a little bit about online source citation. My feeling is that with great online databases come great responsibility, to borrow a phrase from a movie. Here is an example of a citation from Family Search of a census. This is the exact same citation on Ancestry.com. Not only do they differ, but they are in a text format. If we were to follow the standard by Elizabeth Schoen Mills, that's what the source citation would look like. So we need a standardization among online databases that when we click on a document, we don't just download the document. We actually download the metadata that goes along with that document. So that would be the citation and some additional information. Here is a sample citation model from Elizabeth's book called Evidence Explained for that census record. You notice that different parts of the citation are broken off into different fields. Those could actually be used as metadata fields, maybe in an XML document, so that you could determine, for this source type, these are the fields that are in this document, so this is the input that the user is going to need to input in. And then on the back side, when we're actually going to render that information as a citation, then we could use XML as well. There's already a format out there called Citation Style Language, and that is what a product called Zotero uses, which is a plug-in to the Firefox browser. We could click on a link. Think of when we download financial transactions from the web for like Quicken or Money. What if all that information for our source documents came along with it? So here's just a few books. The Red Book was mentioned. There's a few key, cornerstone books that are in genealogy. Let's start treating those as a requirement specification document and go through and look at that standards manual and figure out how we can incorporate those things in. But for example, the GPS, it's a workflow. Why doesn't the workflow fit in there? Almost every genealogy software supports GEDCOM. But why is it that these standards that have been around for 10 years or more, why are they not supported in our software? So the next part I want to talk about is stress-free imports. Now, how many people, well, they've been working away, they've got their family history database like how they like it, they hook up with some second cousin somewhere, they get sent a GEDCOM file. How many people import that directly into their main database? Nobody? Why not? Well, we don't know. We don't know what the quality of the information is. And this whole match and merge process, well, we have one person represented in our database, and that same person represented in the GEDCOM file, and we determine that they're the same person. We have to merge them together, and so we take some information from here and some information here, but we actually get rid of them. And so now there's only one person, and there's no going back. What if there was a screen that was an import history screen? So we go ahead and import this information in, and it's part of the database, but it's kept secret. It's separate, sorry, that they're linked together as opposed to merged together. And so we could, for example, with a click of a button in the first column, hide all that information throughout the database so we don't see it, or we want to turn it on and we can see where we got it from, or we could just delete it and it would go away, but it wouldn't affect the data that we've entered in. So that requires link and layer. So I've already described this process of first linking as opposed to merging people together. And then how would we represent that in layers? Well, we're back to Photoshop Elements 6. So a diagram or a photo that you work on in Photoshop Elements is really a composite of all the different layers. You can hide a layer separately. You can edit that layer and not affect the other layers. But really, the information that you see in the photo is a composite of all these different layers. Well, how would this look in a genealogy software application? So here is actually a family group sheet sample from the original evidence book. It's not the whole thing, but it's got footnotes at the bottom. So we have three sources 1, 2, and 3. We notice that the birth date, there's actually two birth dates on a line. We can do that today, you know, with HTML or other mechanisms. And so we notice that there's two different birth dates, one from source 1, one from 2. The same with the city, county, state, country areas. They come from different sources. We look at the marriage line. All that marriage information came from the second source. So what if we were able to go down here and just hide that? So now we're looking at just the information that we got from the first source and the third source, or we can go ahead and turn that back on. And it gives us the ability to layer this information together, but it gives us complete control over how we see it. Going back to the GPS, maybe some of the information at the analysis step, we want to see it all. But maybe at the conclusion step, we only want to see that information that we've come to conclusion. So while we have this ability to have different views depending on where we are in the process. The next one is source provenance. Okay, here's the example. We've got the census taker. He goes out, and he's going house to house, and he's writing down information in a book. Well, then he takes that, and so that's the original. And he takes that, and then depending on the census, he goes out and makes a transcription of that. So he copies it down, you know, the names and FF, MMM, whatever it is to fill out this transcript. And that is what gets sent to the federal government. Okay, so now along comes the microfilming effort, and that is microfilm. So now we're at another generation away from the original. It's a derivative. It's an image copy. And then along comes digitization. So Ancestry, for example, digitizes that microfilm copy. And now we have another generation removed. At each generation that's removed, then there could be a mistake made, or there could be something in the filming or something in the processing of it that introduces errors. Then we print that document out, so now we're another generation removed. I wonder how many people are using census records on sites like Heritage Quest and Ancestry and think actually that what they're dealing with is an original source. They're not. In most cases, they're dealing with a derivative. So the ability to have that source provenance out there, I think this comes into the great responsibility of online sources, databases area as well. Why would we as genealogists and family historians have to do that provenance over and over again? If you have records and you're making them available online, there should be a format where that provenance is already defined. So it's correct and it's only has to happen once. So how might something like this look in a genealogy application? So here's an example of, we have three documents actually in our database. One's an image copy of this, looks like maybe a journal page, a transcript of that, and also an abstract off of that. So here's a way that very easily in our genealogy software, we can see this provenance, and we can be able to understand the relationship and make decisions in our analysis based on that information. We have a lot more information that we have available to us to make those decisions. This next point, there's so many things that I could talk about in here, and I'm just going to go over it quickly, but we have lots of information in our genealogy databases that visualizations, some of the ones that we've seen today and others, will really help us understand that genealogy data better. Here is an example from smartmoney.com site that uses tree maps. depending on different information. Some squares are bigger, some smaller. And it shows us some information in a very visual way. What if we had that available in genealogy software? What if the first thing that we looked on was number of people based on location? And so those people, those locations that had more people in our database would be bigger and smaller. Maybe we drill down and we can see then by surname how many people are in that location. Just gives us a nice way of visualizing and kind of drilling down into our information. Here's something very simple. Tag list, surname cloud. In this database, we know that there's lots of Windsors because the name's bigger. What if we do a query? Maybe we're interested in all of our female ancestors and how old they were when they died. Well, maybe we can do a visualization and say, well, this is the age distribution that they were when they died. That might provide us some information health-wise that we wouldn't know before. The next thing that genealogy software should do for us is remember. It remembers what our research goal is, what our game plan is, how we're going to approach the situation, keep track of our research as we go along, keep track of an audit trail of each person that we work with in the database. So when we go back to that person, we know exactly what we were doing the last time we were there on that person with that person. Maybe we're doing a website visit and we're adding that website as a source to our database. Why doesn't it also automatically add a to-do list to go back and check that site in 6 months so that we can see if the information's changed? We can view this information in a dashboard. Think of some of the dashboards that are available like Outlook today. Basically, if we set our family history work down for 2 weeks or 2 years, I'd like to be able to go back and have enough context that I can pick right back up where I left off and not spend a lot of time trying to figure out where I was. The last point I want to talk about is sharing. Some of the information that we have in our database, we want to keep private. Some we want to share maybe with a specific group. Maybe it's family or those that are researching a certain surname, those that are researching a certain location. Also, we want to make some information public. We have some information in desktop applications. We have some on online. We want to be able to make sure that we can share back and forth between those. There's a whole bunch of social networking sites specifically for genealogy that are springing up, but they each have their own information separately. There needs to be a way to share that information around so that we can still make the connections that we want to and that we own the data and not the sites. That just brings a question of the format for sharing. The most used format for sharing genealogy data today is the GEDCOM. That's been around since version 5 since 1996, and it has limited support for media types. What about this morning with MOSEI? What if we backed up our information, but we could back up part of it and still have access to it? And maybe that's the information that we spread along with our data transfer so we can still share images and have it backed up at the same time. If we look at word processing software, for example, Word, we started off with the TXT or text format. We needed a little bit of more rich functionality, so there was the RTF. We still needed more. There was the DOC. Now there's DOCX. What is there for genealogy? We've got the GEDCOM. What's next? Maybe XML? All right, this is the last slide, the last picture actually in a series of four from a book called About Face 3, The Essentials of Interaction Design by Alan Cooper. He's well known in the interaction design industry. So the first evolution of the design process is kind of the two guys in the garage theory. So a couple guys come up with an idea, and they work on the software, and they do the whole thing, and they finally ship it, and everything's great, and then as time goes on, maybe we need to have somebody that has some more business knowledge. Maybe it's domain knowledge in the area of the software that they're building, or maybe it's just general business knowledge. Then over time, they add a dedicated tester or two or a group that ensures quality before we ship it out. And then what we see a lot is that a designer like a graphics designer is added at the very end to make it look better right before we ship it. It's kind of an afterthought. This is an evolution where those that are using the software are involved at the very beginning. The designers are able to talk with them and get that input before the programmers start coding. We still have the quality assurance, but on the back end, those that use the software, in this case family historians and genealogists, are consulted as well. Next week, Footnote is going to actually come to my house with a few people and watch me use their software. And I'm not sure if it's going to be at the beginning of the process or if it's going to be me involved at the end, but that is things that we're starting to see, and it's very encouraging that design is becoming more important in the design of our software. So here we are. We are a genealogy software community. We had a good mix of people. Would have liked to see a lot more of those that the whole reason they're here is to use the software. We need to get the word out. We need to become a community where we can share ideas and make and come up with even better ideas that we can innovate and we can design the genealogy software of tomorrow. So that is my hope that some mechanism that we will be able to do that and that we take these ideas that I've had and even more ideas and make them better. I believe that there's an abundance of ideas out there and there's just plenty of room to share. So thank you.
We're a bit over, so I want you to have people address you directly if they've got questions. Is that okay? All right.